This is George Smart with North Carolina Modernist Houses. Today I'm talking with Bob Miller, one of the original graduates of Henry Camp Hefner's School of Design in Raleigh, North Carolina at North Carolina State University. How you doing, Bob?
Just fine, thank you, George.
So what was it like your first couple days in this program?
Well, I actually entered, I believe, before Henry got to the school. I think he came maybe in 48, and I entered in 47, but knew he was coming. And it was probably the sophomore year when they had a sophomore enrollment in School of Design at about 265 students. And it was that statement of look to your left, look to your right, and that person won't be here when you graduate. And it basically ended up that way. I think there was about more than 10, but less than 20 that graduated out of that class at the same time.
So what was Camp Hefner's impact on the school? What was the difference before and after he got there?
Well, basically the school before that, I think, was a four-year degree and was architectural engineering. And when Henry came, it became a five-year school. And within 1 year, he had it accredited by the appropriate authorities, which was a major, accomplishment. And then he brought in people like Duncan Stewart, George Matsumoto, Jim Fitzgibbon. I think Jim Leslie from Washington University, St. Louis. Terry Wall was there, who did the round building, which was recently, I believe, demolished.
Harrelson Hall, yes.
Yes. And Nowitzki died in that plane crash. And Edward Catalano was our fifth-year instructor.
Now, were you part of that famous speech in 1950 by Frank Lloyd Wright?
I remember when he was there and they did the routine of students out on the lawn with Frank LLW sitting in on a chair, surrounded by the students, giving his routine of what was going on, et cetera, et cetera.
That was the most well-attended talk by an architect, I think, in history up to that time. About 5,000 people attended in Reynolds Coliseum.
Yeah, it was a big, big situation. I mean, but Henry didn't have the greatest background as a practicing architect, but he knew how to get the people and how to get things done.
And the school attracted other notables as well. Richard Neutscher came a couple times?
Well, Neutscher was there. I don't know if I was in a meeting with him or not. I do remember Beast coming, George Nelson was there, and they would end up in after-hour parties at somebody's apartment and go for hours into the night.
Now, I've heard an apocryphal story that some of the students got Mies drunk and he fell down some stairs?
Well, I don't know if he fell down some stairs, but I know he got drunk because I was there.
Well, tell me what you remember about Mies.
Well, there was no doubt of what he thought about himself, but I can remember him sitting on the floor having a drink with, an apartment full of guys and some wives and girlfriends, etc., just listen and pontificate as the night went on. But it wasn't any great theme about architecture or anything at those hours on into the night.
Now, the story I heard was that he was in an apartment or something down on Hillsborough Street, like up on the second floor someplace.
Yeah, that's where it was.
Okay. So this is a true story. We've verified this now.
Oh, yes. I think that the Hillsborough and the second floor was the Varsity Arms apartment in which Gil Slack, myself, Alvis George, Rube Miller, Tom Condit, Neil Byrne, and Morris Nakayama at one time lived in that apartment.
You've got a great memory, Bob.
Which was, like I said, above a Greasy Spoon restaurant and adjacent to the Varsity Theater and Norman's clothing store. And one of the most interesting things about Norman that I'll never forget was he played a trombone and he played in various gigs with various groups. And around that time, Stan Kenton was big, and that's what Norman was playing. And we were still talking about jazz and Dixieland, et cetera. And we asked him, I don't know, one time to, you know, play some jazz or something. And his comment to us was, you wouldn't blow Colonial, would you? So that probably, without a doubt, was one of the most inspiring and life-changing deals for me that I could have experienced.
It was a really heady time for a lot of the people who attended during those years.
It was. I mean, the other thing is, School of Design introduced Levi to NC State's campus.
They did?
Yeah. The students were the first that I can remember wearing Levi's. And as I said, third floor Daniels, the lights burned 24 hours a day. And it was a comment across campus about those crazy guys up there in the School of Design.
So this was Levi's like in blue jeans?
Yes.
Okay.
And back then, we had third floor Daniels, and we had the barracks, and that was in the Quonset huts. Willie Bumgarten, who was a hangover from the old school, I don't know when he came to the Saints, but he worked at Peter Barron's office in Europe, and he taught history of architecture in the Quonset huts.
Now, where were the Quonset huts on campus, approximately?
I think at one end, like up the hill, was the Ag building.
All right, yes.
And it was a big, I mean, lawn, I don't know, blocks long in which the Quonset huts sat. And then the barracks were fairly close to Daniels Hall.
And Brooks Hall came along a lot later, right?
Oh, yes, considerably later.
Where the school is headquartered now.
Yeah, they went into the library first, and then one or two additions, which came, I think George did the first edition, Matsumoto, and then I think Harry Wolf did the second edition.
He did the Camp Hefner building, the brick one.
Yeah.
So, Bob, tell me about your career after graduating from NC State.
Upon graduation, June of 53, I was slated for the Army or military service. And my dad was killed in an industrial accident, and I got a 6 months deferment beyond my educational deferment. And went into the Army and was fortunate enough to go to Germany. And at that time, Germany's payment of reparations was coming to an end. So the military, the government was looking for anybody in architecture or any type of engineering to be associated with the engineering officers for the Army to get as much done as apartments, schools, PXs, any facilities that they needed to be paid with German money. And so all the time I was overseas, I wore Class A uniform, was chauffeur for German architects and engineers, and we visited all the facilities in our area, which was centered on Würzburg, Germany. And it just added to my education that helped me when I came back for licensure. While I was in the Army, they wanted me to either re-up or join the civilian office, but I wasn't registered, and to me that was going to be the most important thing, so I didn't do that. And when I came back, Vernon was working in Newport News, Virginia, for William Coyle and Blanchard, an architectural engineering firm. And so I went up there to work for a while. He left, went to Skidmore's. I stayed on for a while, then went to Raleigh for a short period of time. And I forget the exact connection. It was one of the professors at State knew about me and knew that Odell was looking for people. I got a call from Julie Odell. I lived in New Jersey. And he offered me a job. Came to Charlotte in 1959, and I haven't left.
Had he done the Charlotte Coliseum by then?
No, that was already built. I think that was built about 1954.
Okay. But he was busy building a lot of downtown, I understand.
Oh, yeah. He did what was then the Wachovia building. He was the local, and Harrison and Abramovitz were the design architects. It was a precast concrete skin on the building.
And how long were you with Odell?
I stayed with Odell for about 3 years, then went to Scott Thurby's office, which was Thurby Walters and Associates, and I stayed there a short time of 34 years.
Wow.
Then basically retired from them as a partner, and I wasn't through yet, so I got an invite by Wayne Tavis, who was basically doing interiors, and I've been with Wayne, I don't know, I think it's at least 12. I've been registered since 1956 and joined AIA in 1960.
Well, you're a young man with a lot of promise, Bob. I know you've got a big career ahead of you.
But I don't know what else I would have done.
What are some of the things that you have seen change the most over time about architects and the way architects do their business?
Well, computer for one. I'm a dinosaur. I mean, I can't draft with one. About the most I can do is receive or send an email. But I don't know that the computer has helped comprehension for the young guys. When they work on a computer, they think because it's on the computer, it's got to be right. And, you know, the saying goes, junk in, junk out. Garbage in, garbage out. And I'm not sure when they do that and work on it, get so concentrated that they ever have a big picture. And they don't know what bumwad is, and that maybe you ought to sketch something out before you put these lines on the screen thinking they've got to be right.
Now, tell our listeners, Bob, just what bumwad is.
Bumwad is a 12-inch long or 18-inch long, possibly 24-inch long piece of yellow tracing paper, which is sketching paper. You've worked up a detail or worked up a sketch of design or whatever, and then when you went on the drafting board, you would go from there to hardlining on it. But you couldn't exist without bumwad.
So bumwad allowed you to do preliminary sketches before you put it on the actual plan.
Right.
And now, I guess the computers have made that an obsolete process.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if you ask somebody what bumwad was, they would know or have ever seen it.
Back in the 50s and 60s, it seemed like North Carolina and North Carolinians were really interested and positive about design, particularly modernist design across the state in some of our manufacturing facilities and our government offices. Do you think that that's gotten any better or any worse over time?
Well, the School of Design, I guess, where you started to see modernism in houses. You see a brick house or whatever, single story, low-flung roofs, et cetera, and you knew it was the School of Design influence. And the School of Design, in turn, became the influence on commercial buildings and governmental buildings.
And when did that kind of start to fall out of favor?
Well, I guess when the developers and the money people were the final say-so and everything, things started to, go differently. I mean, you could have a contract with a builder based on a handshake. Now, you know, you attend and you have to have a fleet of lawyers present, et cetera, in order to do a contract.
Do you think that modernism fell out of favor, like, with the late 60s or the early 70s?
Well, yeah, probably the latter part of the 60s, I would guess. Well, what you're doing is a strong indication, and here in Charlotte, though, there's an organization that has a review of houses every year based on mid-modern.
That would be the Charlotte Museum of History. It recently took over the Mad About Modern tour.
Right.
So what are some of your favorite buildings around the state, Bob?
Horton Arena, I guess, is one. That was Nowitzki's, done with Dietrich. I think the old Coliseum here in Charlotte, done by Odell.
Is that old Coliseum still standing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's still utilized.
I thought they had torn down one of them. Was that one of the middle ones?
Yeah, the one they did for basketball for the Hornets, they tore down and built an arena uptown.
Okay.
Smaller than the one out on Tivola, which was, I think, about 23,000, was not a bad, I mean, you know, if you got up high enough, people on the court looked like an ant. But, not a bad seat in the house. And then when they built the new one, the criteria, I think, for the pros was more in the neighborhood of 18,000 people.
Okay.
Because they didn't want to have TV and show empty seats. But when they first did the Coliseum on Tivola and the Hornets basketball played there, every game but two were sellouts. And though they weren't a good team, fans were ape about the team, and Muggsy Bogues from Wake Forest, Topeka from Notre Dame. It was the uniforms back then were designed by Alexander Julia, which was a relationship to the store in Chapel Hill.
Sure.
And they were the best-selling items for the fans across the nation.
There's a question I have for you, Bob, about Charlotte. I remember growing up that it was so cool to go to downtown Charlotte, and you could go in between all the buildings by these little bridges that were over the road that connected maybe 5 or 10 buildings downtown.
Well, that's the Overstreet Mall.
Okay.
And that came from Minneapolis in the wintertime. You probably couldn't go on the street, so that would work. I think that it attributed to the killing of downtown retail, or, well, it's now called uptown, retail for Charlotte. And even to this day, visitors complain, where's the retail? And they're told they have to go to South Park. But there is a move to try to bring that back or increase it. South Tryon Street has been developed. And they're now extending the Blue Line light rail to UNCC. And on the northern end, they're going to try to do development, but probably do it a little more diverse than what has happened on the south end.
And aren't they building a new Amtrak station downtown?
Well, that's in the plan. They haven't started that yet, but I think they've still got to work out rail right-of-ways with that, but they're going to try to put bus, light rail, and Amtrak back uptown somewhere on West Trade in the vicinity of the Gateway Center, which I believe was a Bank of America development.
That's going to be really impressive, because right now you have to stop at a nice little modernist building, but it's kind of beat up Amtrak station outside of town when you come into
Charlotte. Right. But the old-time Charlatans who moan and groan about traffic are already moaning and groaning about putting a station uptown, and the question is, where are you going to park? Which, I mean, they will provide parking or whatever, but it's going to be probably a bigger hassle than it presently is.
Well, parking has always been an issue, it seems like, in Charlotte.
And South Park at noon is, you know, like bumper-to-bumper cars, And it's only going to get worse because they keep building and building and building.
One last question. I understand that Walter Hook, he was a well-known architect in Charlotte for a long time.
Right.
And it was his nephew or his son that was Charles Guathme?
A nephew, I believe, or a great-nephew.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But it was not his son.
And, of course, Charles Guathme went on to great things.
Yes.
And did you know Crutcher Ross?
Yes, I knew Crutcher.
I got to meet Crutcher just a few years before he passed away.
Well, Crutcher would go to a cocktail party, and across the room, they would be talking about some project. And if you saw Crutcher the next day, he'd start talking as if it was his project.
Really?
Yeah. Now, you know about Harry Mays.
Yeah, I interviewed him this last summer. He's down in Florida now.
Oh, he is?
He retired from Bates Mozzie on Long Island and went back to his hometown of Florida.
Yeah, I just found that out. Yeah. I had seen something, computer, one of the magazines or whatever, and I talked to him about it, and I got on their mailing list for their 5x7 cards of their projects. Saw some recently where he had retired.
Yes. Now, tell me a little bit about Lib Lee. By the time I talked to her, she was
Lib was out of Lumberton. I don't know if her dad was a justice of the peace or, you know, full-fledged judge. She may have been the second woman enrolled at NC State, but she was as smart as a damn whip. We used to have Nick Ujanek for architectural structures. And he would write stuff on formula on the blackboard, and Lib Lee would correct him when he made a mistake.
And how was it for her being the only woman?
I don't think there was any problem. I mean, she was one of the guys. That was it. I don't think anybody thought anything of it.
Because at the time, Henry Kamphefner discouraged a lot of women from pursuing architecture. Because he thought they would just get married and have kids and leave the profession.
I think she was, I can't remember how, I don't know that she was the best designer in the world, but she had the brains, that's for sure.
Well, Bob, I really want to thank you for spending some time talking with me.
Well, I'm more than glad to do it, George, and I'm really proud of what you're doing, and I hope you can keep up the success, and I'm amazed at the amount of periodicals you've been able to gather. It is beyond belief.
Well, thank you, and if you run across any other classmates that I haven't talked to yet, please send them my way.
I will, for sure. Thank you again.
All right. Bye-bye, Bob.
Bye.